In his new book, Breaking and Entering, From Auditions to Agents to a Career, Philip Carlson takes us inside the world of making it in film, stage, and TV. It's published by Opus, and I'm pleased to welcome Philip Carlson, who's been the New York head of talent at three of the most prestigious agencies in the business, to our show. Hello.
Hello. I am delighted to be here.
Now, you've been in the business for over 32 years. Had you been thinking about writing a book all along?
I hadn't. It hadn't.
People didn't say to you, Phil, you know, you have so many great stories, you got to write a book about it.
No one ever said that to me. Until, actually, Michael Miller said that to me, and I did.
Well, how does someone get started in the business? Weren't you an actor first? Is that typical?
I was an actor. I think everybody in show business was an actor first. I started that way. I made a living, I say very defensively, for 7 years, but I wasn't very good, and I wasn't having fun. And so I was out in California. I was under contract to Universal Studios. They dropped me. They dropped Harrison Ford the same week they dropped me. And
Was that reassuring? Or?
Well, he wasn't Harrison Ford at that point. I mean, we just thought we're two out-of-work actors, you know. So then I got divorced, and then I moved back to New York, and I fell in love with this fabulous woman who was a chef, and I thought, she has a career, I should have a career. So I went, and the first interview I had was at a management office. I didn't even know what a manager was or did, and in those days there were very few of them. But
did they hire you because you were already in the business and you had some knowledge of how it worked?
No, they hired me because they just fired an assistant and they needed an assistant, and I was there. And they thought, you know, if it didn't work out, they could fire me. I was making $95 a week or something. It was not a high-level job. And a lot of people, you know, these days even more so, but then most people want to work in agencies or casting offices or movie studios just to learn the business. It's the way in. It's the time-honored way in.
But then you wound up representing some pretty great actors. How do you get to that point?
Well, you have to be allowed. I think I had I stayed at the management office for 10 years. I felt that the majority of our people didn't need managers, so I got a job at an agency called Smith Friedman, which was one of the best agencies in town. And
they didn't need an agent because they just got called for jobs automatically?
They got called for jobs automatically, or they didn't need a manager, I meant to say. Did I say they didn't need an agent?
Now, you wanted to show the distinction between a manager and an agent?
Well, the old saying used to be 15%, but the distinction, an agent's job is to get work for his actor. And a manager's job is everything else. A manager is not supposed to negotiate. They do. And they're not supposed to seek work for their clients. They do. They're supposed to tailor a career to the actor. But these days, there's so many actors and so little work that everybody winds up doing everything. But I just wanted to get out of the management office. I felt we were taking money falsely. And I think agents do a real service.
You were the first agent to sign a lot of people who went on to become stars, among them Philip Seymour Hoffman, Claire Danes, Paul Giamatti. Kara Sedgwick said that you, who you also were the first to sign, said that you saw more in her than she saw in herself. So were you seeing things in these people that others weren't seeing?
I think so. I think it's sort of crass to say, but I think that's how I was able to sell them, because I genuinely saw something that was special or unique, because I think every actor, every human being is unique, but every actor has something special to bring, and I figure it's my job to bring it if I believe in that person.
Do certain clients, are certain clients better fits for certain agents?
Absolutely.
Do agents specialize? Because you seem to specialize in not necessarily the glamour actors, but rather the people who had a lot of talent.
Well, yeah. I think that was my reputation. If they're hard to sell and have a lot of talent, maybe send them to Philip. Philip Seymour Hoffman in the early days, I say this in the book, nobody knew what to do with him. And they'd say, yeah, I guess he's intense and he read well, but what's he right for? And I said, he's right for anything you've got.
You tell the story of the first time you ever saw him perform.
I did.
What did you see in him?
It was a reading at the Old Circle Rep, which was down on Sheridan Square. And a manager friend called me and said she had just signed a new client. She went to see her in a reading last night, and there was a guy in it who she thought I might find interesting because she did, and would I go? And I went. I was just floating on the ceiling listening to him read. I'd never heard that kind of authenticity, that kind of ruthless, effortless honesty that he brought to everything.
And he had a wonderful career, but should an agent get involved if he suspects that his client has an alcohol or a drug problem?
I don't know. That's a tough call.
Were you even aware?
Wasn't aware of it then. He was not my client by the time he went back to drugs. When I signed him, when he was pretty fresh out of NYU undergrad, he was just getting over a drug problem. And he didn't go back until what year it was during the death of a salesman. So he didn't have a drug problem when I represented him. I've had people who had drinking problems or, I guess, cocaine problems. But I don't
know how
to do it.
Did you say anything to them? You got to go into rehab?
If it was getting in the way of the work, I would. Otherwise, I felt it was kind of not my business.
My guest is Philip Carlson, who's written a book called Breaking and Entering, From Auditions to Agents to a Career. Now, Philip Seymour Hoffman came out of acting school. Would you recommend to somebody who's thinking of make a career in show business today to go to one of the university schools, the grad school programs?
That's a complex question, Leonard.
Well, I don't like to ask the easy ones.
Okay. I think I have a friend who practically invented the showcase system for presenting graduate students to actors, agents and casting directors. And I was having a drink with him one day, and he said, look at this letter. And it was from a young girl who said she was at a liberal arts college, and she had asked her drama teacher for help because she thought she wanted to be an actress. And the drama teacher said that she should go to graduate acting school. She should then they would have a showcase, and she would get an agent, and the agent would get to find her work. And I thought, I've never seen more misinformation in a page in my life. So I thought, I wrote my book. And I think graduate acting programs are wonderful. But again, some of them are wonderful for some people, like some agents are wonderful for some people.
And then there are other acting schools like HB Studios, Stella Adler, and they seem to have produced a lot of good people.
Some wonderful people. It's the teacher. It's the, you know, Marlon Brando's teacher was his mother. Did she train anybody else? I don't think so. But she was all right for him. So it's.
Would you say that a big agency is a good or bad idea for a young actor? I know of a performer who was excited when she was signed by a very famous agent after he saw her in a nightclub showcase performance, but he didn't get her much work. And when she asked why, he said that he made more in commissions for, in this case, it was Barbara Streisand, than he could ever make for her if he got her 100 jobs. So he wasn't looking to get her any work, really.
He was hoping for luck, for lightning in a bottle, I guess.
I don't know. Maybe he hoped that she'd get something and then he could work with her, but
Well, that's a much more negative answer than I would have given, but I do agree with you. I think large agencies are a terrible place to launch a career. They just have too much on their plate, and they're not used to fighting for people. They don't, you know, say, you know, when you should see Betty Boop, she just got out of school. And they say, well, I don't want to see Betty Boop. And they say, well, what do you mean? I just told you to. So they don't know how to push for clients. And they also will send them, I've had clients who go to California who signed with a manager out there. The manager would ask me to submit them for five things that they were really completely wrong for.
Well, since New York right now is a pretty big place for film and television, I think Atlanta is another one. Does it matter whether you signed in Hollywood or signed in New York?
It doesn't. I think, you know, there's cliche ways of New York tends to attract the more serious actor. Hollywood attracts people who are pretty and look good with their clothes off. But Hollywood's a tough place to start. I know I have a couple students now at The Atlantic who want to go to California. One, because she's marrying a guy who lives there. So that's a very good reason to go. But as a reason to be near work, I don't think that's a good reason.
In the old days, if you were a serious actor, you started in theater, and then you might have got picked up by the movies. Now, sometimes we're seeing it work the other way around. Does it matter anymore whether you have a grounding in theater?
It's mattering less and less. I think it matters ultimately to the quality of the work. I mean, if you want to be an actor, if you want to be an artist, if that's your calling, if you don't live to be on the cover of Vanity Fair, if you really want to win a Tony and be and know your stuff, then I think you need actor training.
Is there a big difference in being the first person to represent an actor versus being their agent once they have already become famous?
Kind of. Everybody who I asked to endorse the book, or who is most of those people quoted in the book, I was the first agent. Kathy Bates, I was not.
Viola Davis?
And Viola Davis, I was not. And Brian Dennehy, I was not. The other people who you missed Idris Elba, who was one of my favorites.
Give me time.
Okay. I was the first for all of those. No, the ones that I make that distinction in the book, that Kathy, wasn't responsible for signing. But steering Kathy once she was Kathy is a different challenge. I mean, I walked into it, Susan Smith's actually, and to reference an earlier question of yours, somebody called me because they had a job they wanted Trevor Howard for. And so I worked out all the dates and everything, and Susan was hovering, as she usually did. And she said, honey, you have to tell them he's drinking again. And I said, Mr. Howard is drinking again. Do you know what that means? He said, it means he's a drunk. I know that. I want him anyway. So
somebody else might have been turned off by that information.
Somebody else might have, yeah. But Susan, to her credit, was a full information person.
Now, you worked for three of the most prestigious agencies in the business. Do they differ much? Is it a reason why you wound up starting your own?
That's a tough one. They differ. All agencies, I think, have personalities that reflect their owners. The large ones, the three large ones, their personalities, they represent stars. Susan used to say, I don't represent people who can get your movie made, but you can't make your movie without the people I represent. Well, I thought that was clever. But to me, all I care about is that somebody is plugged into the moon when they act, that I think they're a great performer. And because it's fun to say to a casting director, you are out of your mind if you don't see this person.
Well, all of the names I've mentioned so far are actors who have had great respect as actors. In fact, Viola Davis probably going to be nominated for another Oscar for Fences.
Viola was a doll. I mean, she was, yes. What do I say to that? She is a great, great actress.
And could you spot that right away? Or is this something that has to be nurtured?
No, you can spot it right away. You can spot it right away, and sometimes people just don't buy it. I saw a wonderful girl at one of the MFA programs who everybody in the office thought was just major. And the casting department at the Public Theater told me she was major. And I couldn't get her arrested. And there was something in her that didn't want the business. She married a guy with a lot of money, and she lives in Texas, and she's happy.
So that attitude was coming across when she auditioned?
Somehow. They would say, you know, she was just... And then they would lay back on something easy, like, well, she wasn't pretty enough. Or she's wrong for the star we have for the guy. Because not pretty enough is standard refusal language for a woman, and not handsome enough or not compelling enough is the same thing for a guy. But if somebody is a wonderful actor and is really, really wants it and really knows how to act, then there'll be plenty pretty enough.
Do you think that the business has changed a lot over the years? In Britain, for example, pretty much every actor did Shakespeare before going on to do other stuff, even the most minor TV role.
Yeah.
Do you think that young people are still interested in studying classical theater?
Oh, yes. Quite amazingly so. I have kids that... want to see, all they want to do is, this. My class now is just did a production of The Winter's Tale. They were thrilled with the play, with the language, with the chance to say those words. Yes, people still want it. The audience is getting less and less and smaller.
My guest has been Philip Carlson, whose client lists included people we've just discussed, along with Liev Schreiber, Adrian Grenier, W.H. Macy. Pretty impressive. The book, Breaking and Entering, a manual for the working actor in film, stage, and TV, from auditions to agents to a career. It is published by Opus Books. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.